from their homes and forced to evacuate time and time again with nothing on, nothing more than the clothes on their backs. So let's imagine millions of people driven from their homes, told to go here, told to go there, and going from one place to another. Families in Gaza have been herded into so-called safe zones, only to face continued bombardment. They're told to go to this area, and the bombs start falling, and the children start dying. Madam President, the children of Gaza have suffered a level of physical and emotional abuse that is almost beyond comprehension. Abuse that will stay with them for the rest of their lives. These children, today, as we speak, right now, are hungry, they are thirsty, they cannot access health care, and all around them, they have witnessed death and destruction. That is what the children of Gaza have experienced, and Gaza is a very young population. And Madam President, as horrific as that situation is, what has happened over the last year, what is taking place today, right now, this moment, as we discuss this issue, it is even worse, if that is imaginable. As a result of Israel blocking desperately needed humanitarian aid, the volume of aid getting into Gaza in recent weeks is lower than at any point since the war began. More aid is needed, less aid is getting through. The result, many thousands of children are facing malnutrition and starvation. Let me repeat that. Many thousands of children today are facing malnutrition and starvation. This is not my observation. This is what the leaders of the 19 most important humanitarian organizations on the ground in Gaza, including the American head of UNICEF, Kathy Russell, and the American head of the World Food Program, Cindy McCain, wife of our former colleague, John McCain. That is what they say. According to their recent report, quote, the situation unfolding in North Gaza is apocalyptic. Basic life-saving goods are not available. Humanitarians are not safe to do their work and are blocked by Israeli forces and by insecurity from reaching people in need. End of quote. And they continue. As a result, quote, the entire population in North Gaza is at imminent risk of dying from disease, famine, and violence. End of quote. These are the 19 major humanitarian organizations operating in Gaza right now, including several of the major ones led by Americans. And Israel's recent decision to ban UNRWA, the backbone of humanitarian response in Gaza, will only make a horrific situation even worse. Madam President, I have met with doctors who have served in Gaza, treating hundreds of patients a day without electricity, without anesthesia, without clean water, including dozens of children arriving with gunshot wounds in the head. I've seen the photographs and the videos, and we have some of them here. I've heard from UNICEF, who estimate that 10 children lose a leg in Gaza every single day. There are now more than 17,000 orphans in Gaza. Madam President, let me quote from a New York Times opinion piece of October 9th, 2024, a little more than a month ago, where American doctors and nurses in Gaza, these are Americans, working in Gaza, describe what they saw on the ground. Meryl Tidings is a nurse from New Mexico, and she said, quote, these people were starving. She's talking about healthcare workers, her colleagues. These people were starving. I learned very quickly to not drink in my water or eat the food I had brought in front of the healthcare workers because they had gone so many days without, end of quote, without food, without water. Dr. Nadal Farah from Ohio said, quote, malnutrition was widespread. It was common to see patients reminiscent of Nazi concentration camps with skeletal features, end of quote, Dr. Farah. Abira Mohammed, a nurse from Dallas, Texas, said, quote, everyone we met showed us pictures of themselves before October. They had all lost 20 to 60 pounds of weight. Most patients and staff looked emaciated and dehydrated, end of quote. Dr. Nareen Ahmad from Philadelphia said, quote, every patient I treated had evidence of malnutrition. For example, poor wound healing and rapidly developing infections. Dr. Aman Odeth from Texas said, quote, mothers on the maternity ward delivered prematurely because of malnutrition, stress, and infection. Milk production was poor due to lack of hydration and adequate food supply, end of quote. And Dr. Mike Malat from Charleston said, quote, all of my patients were suffering from malnutrition, 100%, end quote. Madam President, what is important to understand, and I'm not sure that many of my colleagues do, is that the Israel of today that we are dealing with is not the Israel of Golda Meir or Yitzhak Rabin. This is a government now controlled not only by right-wing extremists, but by religious zealots. National Security Minister Ben-Gvir, who oversees the police, has been convicted in Israeli courts on terrorism charges. He's the head of the police. Finance Minister Smotrich, in charge of the occupied West Bank, is also an extreme racist and has called for the expulsion of Palestinians from the land. That is the current Israeli finance minister. Madam President, in January, Prime Minister Netanyahu said of Gaza, and I quote, we provide minimal humanitarian aid if we want to achieve our war goals, end of quote. At the start of the war, the Israeli defense minister said, and I quote, I hope people hear this, Israeli defense minister, ex-minister, quote, we are fighting human animals, and we act accordingly. There will be no electricity, no food, no fuel, everything is closed, end quote, former Israeli defense minister. That is what he said, and in fact, by and large, that is exactly how this war has been waged. Madam President, what this extremist government has done in Gaza is unspeakable. But what makes it even more painful is that much of this has been done with U.S. weapons and American taxpayer dollars. In the last year alone, the U.S. has provided $18 billion in military aid to Israel. $18 billion. And by the way, a few blocks from here, people are sleeping out on the street. And we have also delivered more than 50,000 tons of military equipment to Israel, 50,000 tons. In other words, Madam President, the United States of America is complicit in all of these atrocities. We are funding these atrocities. That complicity must end, and that is what these resolutions are about. It is time to tell the Netanyahu government that they cannot use U.S. taxpayer dollars and American weapons in violation of U.S. and international law and our moral values. Despite receiving $18 billion from U.S. taxpayers in the last year and being the largest historical recipient of U.S. foreign aid, the Netanyahu government has completely ignored the repeated requests of President Biden and the U.S. government. It is time to make clear to Netanyahu that he cannot take American money, take American arms, and continue to undermine U.S. foreign policy goals. The U.S. government wants a ceasefire for hostage deal. Netanyahu has prevented a deal to preserve his coalition. The U.S. government wants more humanitarian aid to reach the desperate people in Gaza. Netanyahu is blocking that aid. The U.S. government wants to contain regional escalation Netanyahu has refused diplomatic off-ramps and launched several reckless attacks without consulting the United States. The United States government wants to stop settlement expansion and settler violence in the West Bank. Netanyahu and his ministers have driven record settlement expansion and armed extremist settlers. The U.S. government wants a plan for post-war governance in Gaza, yet Netanyahu will not engage. And by the way, blocking these sales would also be in keeping with actions taken by some of our closest allies. The United Kingdom suspended 30 arms export licenses after concluding there was an unacceptable risk they could be used in violation of international law. Germany, Italy, Spain, Canada, Belgium, and the Netherlands have taken similar steps. UN bodies have called for an end to the arms shipments fueling the conflict. Madam President, time and time again, I've heard members of the U.S. Senate come to this floor to denounce human rights violations taking place around the world. I've heard well-founded concerns about China's brutal reception of the Uyghur ethnic minority. I've heard rightful outrage about Putin's brutal attacks against Ukraine and bombing of civilian installations. I've heard genuine concern about Iran's outrageous crackdown on peaceful protesters. I've heard repeated condemnations of Saudi Arabia's terrible treatment of women and political dissidents. And on it goes. A lot of folks come to the floor to talk about human rights and what's going on around the world. But what I want to say to all those folks, nobody is going to take anything you say with a grain of seriousness. You cannot condemn human rights around the world and then turn a blind eye to what the United States government is now funding in Israel. People will laugh in your face. They will say to you, you're concerned about China, you're concerned about Russia, you're concerned about Iran. Well, why are you funding the starvation of children in Gaza right now? So, Madam President, we must pass these resolutions from a legal perspective. The U.S. government must obey the law. We must pass these resolutions from a moral perspective. The United States must not provide support to a government which has created one of the worst humanitarian disasters in modern history. We must pass these resolutions for our own best foreign policy interests. If we do not demand that the countries we provide military assistance to obey international law, we will lose our credibility on the world stage.
What you just heard were the remarks of Senator Bernie Sanders delivered on November 20th, 2024 on the Senate floor, making a case to stop the sale of weapons to Israel. You're listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the US and Europe. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. On November 20th, 2024, the United Nations Security Council held a meeting regarding the genocide in Gaza and then voted on a resolution put forward by 10 elected members of the Council calling for an immediate and unconditional ceasefire. 14 United Nations Security Council members voted in favor of the resolution, and only one country, and as expected, the United States vetoed the resolution in favor of the ongoing genocide against the Palestinians. Ambassador Majid Bamia, Deputy Permanent Observer of Palestine to the United Nations, delivered a speech at the UN Security Council after the US used its veto power. Let's take a listen.
There is no right to mass killing of civilians. There is no right to starve an entire civilian population. There is no right to forcibly displace a people, and there is no right to annexation. This is what Israel is doing in Gaza. These are its war objectives. This is what the absence of a ceasefire is allowing it to continue doing. This full-fledged Israeli assault against the Palestinian people and the Palestinian land is about everything except the hostages. If the families of hostages can see that, how can anyone in this room claim otherwise? A ceasefire will allow to save lives, all lives. This was true a year ago. This is even more true today. A ceasefire doesn't resolve everything, but it is the first step towards resolving anything. And what is the answer of those who are still unwilling now, after all this death and destruction, not to call for an unconditional ceasefire? Is it to accept that the killing should continue until we resolve everything while we watch that we are resolving nothing? We heard over and over again statements in this chamber by all members without distinction about protection of civilians, about rejecting forcible displacement, about rejecting starving the Palestinian population, about rejecting annexation, about rejecting wanton destruction, about rejecting regional escalation. Everyone around this table agreed on these objectives. And yet here we are, 44,000 Palestinians killed. This is those who are accounted for. Many more are not accounted for. One day we will retrieve them in mass graves under the rubbles, and we will discover the real numbers of this horror. And there will be many that we will never retrieve. Famine that is looming all over Gaza, that is a reality in northern Gaza. 2 million people displaced, still hunted even when they are in tents. Total destruction of Gaza and all the requirements of life in it. And war on Lebanon, its people and its sovereignty. What does it mean to proclaim all these principles, we reject, we reject, we reject, and then shield Israel of the consequences of its actions, thus allowing it to do exactly what we're asking it to stop doing? Madam President, the world should not grow accustomed to the death of Palestinians, to seeing Palestinian children starving, to seeing mothers carrying their children from one place to another, forcibly displaced. They should not get accustomed to seeing journalists killed and humanitarians killed, to see Palestinians detained, abducted, carried on trucks, to go be tortured, sexually abused, and raped. The fact we are Palestinians does not make that less shocking or less outrageous. Maybe for some we have the wrong nationality, the wrong faith, the wrong skin color. But we are humans, and we should be treated as such. Is there a UN charter for Israel that is different from the charter you all have? Tell us. Is there an international law for them, an international law for us? Do they have the right to kill, and the only right we have is to die? What the hell does Israel need to do more for this council to act under Chapter 7? What more can they do for this council to act under Chapter 7? Or will this council be the last place on earth that cannot recognize a threat to peace when they see it? When it is so glaring, so undeniable. You are witnessing the attempt to annihilate a nation, destroy a nation. It is not even hidden. It is in plain sight. And yet the very tools designed to respond to these situations are not being used. So which one is it? Are Palestinian lives not worth saving? Or does Israel have a license to kill? Can this council only adopt resolutions and then witness their blatant breach? This self-inflicted powerlessness has to stop. And like Algeria, we repeat, the resolutions of this council are binding. Their role is to be enforced. Their role is to change reality, not to record violations for history's purposes and then allow them to continue. Had diplomatic efforts succeeded, we would not be here. We recognize all the efforts that were done, all the diplomatic efforts that were conducted. And yet, we have to recognize children are still starving in Gaza. Families are being killed. Communities are being obliterated. Had these efforts succeeded, we would not be here. But what we cannot accept is that Israel has a veto that blocks any attempts to put an end to this war, especially when we know what are its true intentions. Madam President, many peoples, many governments around the world are saying the right things and trying to do the right things. And we have here to express our gratitude to the E10 for their relentless efforts for over a year now. And in the recent month, we all were hoping that 2735 would lead to a ceasefire. And we can discuss who is responsible for that ceasefire not occurring. For us, it is pretty clear that Israel had never an intention to accept a ceasefire and has found every reason not to have a ceasefire. We thank Guyana for its efforts in coordinating the ETAN initiative. We thank all of those who have voted in favor of this resolution, and we agree with Malta and with Algeria. This is the bare minimum. This is the bare minimum that morality, humanity, legality would plead for. And this bare minimum, even this bare minimum, was vetoed. I truly do not understand, and you're saying we cannot be for an unconditional ceasefire. What that means in effect now is that we are for a war. You're saying we cannot be for an unconditional ceasefire that does not release the hostages. Is this war releasing the hostages? Is it even trying to release the hostages? So what does it mean? We accept this war that is killing hostages and that is killing, maiming, terrorizing, destroying an entire nation. When is it enough? When is it the point where we say, no, we mean ceasefire now. Now. We will not allow you to not listen to us, to ignore us, to insult us, to play games with us. This resolution is trying to restore life, to save lives. It's not a dangerous message. The draft resolution is not a dangerous message. This veto is a dangerous message to Israel that it can continue executing its plans, the very plans you oppose. And the messages we send do matter. And that is the wrong message at the worst possible time. Israel is responsible for the Palestinian civilians it kills. It cannot be absolved of that responsibility. It is killing them purposefully, deliberately, repeatedly, massively. It is starving them on purpose. Nobody can deny it. We sat in this room, we heard every UN agency, every testimony, every NGO, Palestinian, Israeli, international, saying the same things. This is by design. What does it mean that release of the hostages should be unconditional? This is what the Council has said repeatedly now for a year. Release of hostages should be unconditional. But stopping killing Palestinians is conditional? There are acceptable conditions to stop the mass killing of Palestinians? There's 100 Israeli hostages, and there's 2 million Palestinians in Gaza. 2 million Palestinians in Gaza. They deserve better. They deserve respect for their lives, for their suffering. Israel will always claim conditions have not been met because its plans require it to continue this war, to annex the land and destroy the people. And therefore, we can no longer accept its conditions. 14 months, and we are still debating if a genocide must be stopped. There's no justification whatsoever for vetoing a resolution trying to stop atrocities. No justification for that. Madam President, one day someone will dig up these meetings, the records of them, will see us pleading for the lives of our people over and over and over and over again. And they will try to understand why our calls were not heeded. They will look at the people who sat around this table and spoke and addressed you from all over the world to call on the Council to take action. They will read what everybody here has said. And then they will wonder how a genocide displayed on TVs known to the whole world was able to continue for this long. They will wonder if the whole world is against the mass killing, against the displacement, against the starvation, against the annexation, how come they all occurred? It is because we are allowed to speak about the rules, but not to enforce them. Because we can regret and reject, but not act. There are many states now stepping up to change this reality. We call on all states and all peoples to stand for life, for freedom, and for peace. We are out of time. We repeat, we are against harming any civilians. And we have more than our share of grievances. We could have sat here and tried to justify harming civilians. We never did, not one day. And we're still sitting here after tens of thousands of our people have been killed. Many have been detained. All have been traumatized. All have been displaced. We have many reasons to say otherwise. And yet we remain steadfast. There is no reason to harm civilians, regardless of their nationality, their origin, regardless of the circumstances. But our civilians, what about our civilians? They are worthy of protection. Their lives should be saved. People cannot sit and demand Palestinian pacifism under all circumstances and enable Israeli militarism. That cannot be done. Either you believe violence is an impasse, you believe there are no military solutions, and then you act for peaceful ones and reject military ones, or you let it be military. We are for a peaceful path. Even after all that has happened, we are for a peaceful path. Help us chart it, not block it. Stop them. Help us. You would be helping Palestinians and Israelis and our region and the world. Madam President, there is a world out there where Palestinian children are able to grow. We are not born to be occupied and killed and displaced. That's not our destiny. That's not our fate. There is a world where we could live and grow and see our children grow with no occupation, no bombs, no tents, no settlements, no walls, no military checkpoints, no prisons, no constant humiliation, no oppression, no house demolished, no amputations, no pain and no agony. That world can exist today if we were to act. And the fact we are not means that many, many more Palestinians will suffer and others will suffer. We are trying to get there. We are trying to find a path that leads us there to freedom, to life, and to peace. That should be our common objective. There is a world where there's no war in the Middle East, where Palestinians and Israeli civilians go about their lives, where maybe they can look confidently towards the future and even envisage more bridges between them, where our region unleashes its true and full potential for the benefit of all states and all peoples. It's this future that is being destroyed before our very eyes. And the entire Palestinian civilian population is the primary victim. Madam President, we call on the General Assembly to uphold the responsibilities that the Council has failed to uphold, owing to the U.S. veto. We call on all states to use all available tools to stop the massacres. What this resolution was calling for is an unconditional end to massacres, and that is always worth supporting.
What you just heard was the speech of Ambassador Majid Bamia, Deputy Permanent Observer of Palestine to the United Nations, speaking at the Security Council after the U.S. used its veto power against a resolution that called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. You've been listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.
Mrs. Pepstein's Welt.
Mir schaut kein rum, wirklich um. Nach sieben Gin bin ich auch noch nicht hin. Champagner mit Wodka dazu. Das haut mich nicht um, aber
Mrs. Pepsteins Welt.
Herzlich willkommen in Mrs. Pepsteins Welt. Ihr hört die Juli-Ausgabe auf einem freien Radio eurer Wahl. Und heute gibt es zwei ganz tolle Bands hier in der Sendung. Zum einen lernt ihr in der zweiten Stunde die neue Platte von Bipolar Feminin kennen, Ein fragiles System. Ich habe ein ganz langes Interview mit Leni Ulrich gemacht zu einigen der Songs auf der Platte. Und jetzt in der ersten Stunde gibt es aber eine Leipziger Band, Kappertult. Vielleicht habt ihr vor, ich glaube, ungefähr anderthalb Jahren auch wie ich ein Radiokonzert gehört bei meinem Kollegen Lutz mit dieser Band. Und da habe ich schon total aufgehorcht und dachte so, wow, sehr fresh, sehr toll, auch noch aus Leipzig, gefällt mir. Und jetzt hat Kappertult ein Album veröffentlicht und das heißt Es schmeckt nicht. Und ich habe mich mit Inga und Angie von der Band über ihr Album unterhalten. Und zu Beginn hört ihr den Song Handy von dem Album. Irgendwie reden wir zwei, dreimal in dem Interview über diesen Song. Und dass wir noch nicht drüber geredet haben, wir reden auch nicht drüber, aber ich spiele ihn euch jetzt. Viel Spaß mit dem Interview.